Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Mem Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find 17 lines from the top of Daf Mem Vav, almost halfway down. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have in the margin a nosei, a topic heading written in. We've introduced this section by calling it Lishonos Shel Kiddushin, different wording of Kiddushin, of a marriage offering that a man might make to a woman. We're going to see one type of presentation or speech on the man's part that we call Kloli, and the other type of marriage offer we call Proti. Kloli will refer to a situation where a man is offering several items to the woman, and our interest is in knowing whether there is a shove pruta, a minimum value in that which he's offering her. So when we speak about a language, an expression that's kloli, that would enable us to view all of the items together if they all together are worth a shove pruta, even though each individual item is not worth a shove pruta. Nevertheless, she is married. If the language is categorized as proti, prat means individual, itemized, so that in a situation like that, we would not be able to view all of the items together in order to reach a shove pruta, but there would have to be a shove pruta worth of value in one of the items. It might be that all that each one doesn't have, but if one of them has, that would be enough. There's another scenario that the Mishnah will make reference to, and that is that if you're offering items to a woman, and while you're presenting them to her, if it's a food items, she's eating them as you're speaking. What do we need in order to establish Kiddushin under those circumstances? In a case like that, they're not going to be, when he's finished offering, making his marriage offer, you're not going to have a group of food items left because she's eating them while you're speaking. How do we view a case like that? Now, the Mishnah. Ha'imer li'isha, hiskachi li b'tmorozu, hiskachi li b'zu. He says, be married to me in exchange for this tomorrow date. And then he says again, be married to me with this date. And there are a few dates there, and he's offering them to the woman by saying what we just read, his kachili b'tmorazu, and we say im yesh ba'achas mehen shove pruta mikudeshes. If in one of them there is a shove pruta worth of value, she'll be married. V'im lav, if not, even though there may be a shove pruta worth of value in all of the dates together, but there isn't in any one date a shove pruta worth, eino mekudeshes. She's not going to be married. Why? This is an example of what we call proti. He itemized. And how do you see that in the language? The Gemara will point this out. You see it by the fact that he says, he repeats the word hiskachi. So each date represents a separate offer of marriage. So in a separate offer of marriage, there has to be a pruta worth of value. You don't have a right to add any subsequent items together because he individualized them. He split them into separate offerings. Rashi on the Mishnah, v'im lav eino mikudeshes, if there isn't a shava pruta value in one of those dates that he's offering, the cave on the omer hisgachi, since he repeated the word hisgachi, he didn't present them in one set of dates, but he separated them, each date introduced by the word hisgachi, kolchado v'chado, each one, each date, have a kiddushin ba'an pi nafshai, was a separate offering of marriage. We continue in the Mishnah. Another example. Bezu, bezu, bezu. Again, referring to the dates. He says, be married to me, iskachi li bezu, ubezu, bezu. Im yesh shava pruta bekulon mekudeshes. If there is a pruta worth of value in all of them, she'll be married. In other words, even though each one is worth much less than a pruta, but altogether they would be the equivalent of a pruta, the pruta being the minimum denomination of money, then she'll be married. Im lav, if altogether, or I should say, if even altogether they're not worth a pruta, eino mekudesh, she won't be married. This, the continuation, this next phrase of the Mishnah is going to be the subject of a question in the Gemara. What is it referring to? Is it a continuation of what we just said, or is it a throwback to the beginning of the Mishnah? So we'll just read it without too much explanation as of yet. There are two approaches to this. Hoisoy cheles, rishayna, rishayna. She's eating each date as it's being offered to her. She's eating it one by one. Eino mikudeshes, ad she ba'achas mehen shove pruta. She will not be considered married unless there's a pruta worth of value. And here the Mishnah says, achi ba'achas. Here we'll just translate, but there are different approaches to the word ba'achas. So achi ba'achas means until there is in one of them a pruta worth of value. The Gemara. Man tano hiskachi hiskachi. Who is the tano that says that only by separating the dates, if you will, by a separate hiskachi word, then you create prota. But if you were to say, as we saw in the Mishnah, bezu, ubezu, ubezu, that does not constitute prota, that does not constitute itemization. Who is the Tana that says only by separating them by the we'll call this special word or by a unique phrase, unique term, hiskachi, does that constitute itemizing? But without that, they would not be considered itemized. Omar Rabba Rabbi Shimon he. This is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon the Omar, who said in a totally different context, and we elaborated on this in our shir back on Daf Mem Dalid. So we're not going to elaborate it on again over here. We're going to just introduce it briefly, and that is Reb Shimon talks about the topic of someone who unto whom there are several people entrusted items. And as the watchman over the items, he decides to deny having received them and swears falsely. And it turns out that he's a liar. So Reb Shimon says, "Ad sheyomar shvua l'chol echad ve'echad." There is a penalty for lying under oath, for swearing falsely, trying to get away with money that, or with money or value that you owe somebody. If you swore to several people denying that you owe them, and it turns out you really do, how many violations have taken place? In the nafkamina, the practical ramifications of this, well, how many sacrifices will one have to bring under these circumstances? So if Shimon says, even if you have several people that entrusted items to you, and you said to them, shvua lo lecha v'lo lecha v'lo lecha, meaning, I swear, not to you, not to you, not to you, and turns out that you're lying, you're chayav only one violation. Under when would there be multiple violations? If you said, as we read in the Gemara, If he said, Ad Shiyomar Shvua Lecholechad Vechad, the man would have to say, Shvua Lo Lecha, Shvua Lo Lecha, meaning, I swear I don't owe you anything. And again, repeating, Shvua, not to you. And to the third guy, Shvua, not to you. I don't owe you anything either. That's like the case we saw in the Mishnah, Hiskat Shili B'tmorzu, Hiskat Shili B'zu, using the word, the highlighting word, Hiskachi, Hiskachi, similar to the highlighting word Shivua lo lecha, Shivua lo lecha. That creates separateness or itemizing. Otherwise, they're all viewed as together. The Gemara continues with a quote from the Mishnah, but it's only a partial quote. Bezu ubezu ubezu im yesh bekulon shavet pruta, and then v'chule, you see, etc. We want to focus on the continuation where it said in the Mishnah, hoysa oicheles, until the end of the Mishnah, where it's that sheba achas men shavet pruta. Ahe. The case of hoysa oicheles and the requirement, at sheba achas men shavet pruta, what is that going on? Ilema aresha. If you're to think it's going on the beginning of the Mishnah, my irya oicheles, why speak about her eating? In other words, the end of the Mishnah says there has to be in one of them a shavah pruta. What's the purpose of the end of the Mishnah being a commentary on the beginning if the end of the Mishnah speaking about a woman eating, afilu manachas nami, even if she's not eating them, da hiskachili bezu ka'omar, even if she's not eating them, we're still going to be interested in there being a shava pruta in one of them. He said, bezu, be married to me with this one. He is itemizing. So there would have to be, even without her eating them, there would have to be a shava pruta in one of them. Ela asefa. Rather, the end of the Mishnah, the Hoysa Cheles case, is going on the bazoo situation. So we ask, Viafilu bekomaisa? Even in the first one, the man is saying to the woman, be married to me. Bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. He has a prepared speech, offering marriage to a woman, and in his prepared speech, he's sitting in front of a table with dates on it, and he's saying, "I want you to be married to me." Bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. Are you saying then that when she eats the first of the dates, as he's rambling on with his bazoo, 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 that if the first date happened to have a shava pruta worth of value, she would be married through that? V'ho milvehi. That first date is viewed as a milve, as a loan. Well, you'll ask, where do we see? We don't see her borrowing anything. So let's take a look at Rashi. But maybe even before we look at Rashi, the exclamation of the Gemara by saying Vaha Milvihi, the Gemara is working on a given or on an assumption that Hamekadesh B'Milva Eina Mekudeshes, that a marriage that's offered in exchange for relieving someone of a loan that they owe you. If a woman owes a man money and he says to her, listen, you know, you owe me money, but forget about the loan, but be married to me instead, in exchange for my relieving you of the loan, she's not considered married. That's just a point of background to understand why the Gemara says here, v'ahal milvehi. How can she be married through the first date when that first date constitutes a milve? But what do we mean by that? Here we don't have a formal loan over here. So we take a look at Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines, and we read, V'ha milvehi, kevon de kiddushin lo nigmeru ad shetekablem kulam, since his offer of marriage is not finished until she receives all of them. Remember, he's saying in the Seifa of the Mishnah, bazoo, 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 in this one, in this one, in this one, referring to the dates. and the offer of marriage isn't finished until she receives all of them. V'kvar ochlo es harishayna kodem shetizke oisa b'kidusheha, and she already ate the first one before she received them in the context of marriage. His marriage offer isn't finished until he finishes speaking, and she already ate it before he finished. So what is it? We can't say that she ate the date as something she received as hers in a marriage acceptance. So havia zuha rishona milva gabo. Therefore, the first one, the first date that she ate would be considered like her having received it as a loan. In other words, our description of the first date as a milva is, we'll say, a description out of default, if you will, meaning we can't view the first one as something she has already received as marriage money, marriage value, then it would be hers. Because he hadn't finished offering it to her as marriage value. So what is it then? Well, it would be considered then like a loan. And as we said earlier, you can't marry a woman. The Mishnah had said there has to be a shava pruta in one of them. Are you saying even in the first one that she's already eaten? But that first one that she's already eaten couldn't be considered marriage money because he hadn't finished offering it to her as marriage value. It would be considered nothing other than a mere loan. And you can't, a woman can't be married through a loan. Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Hare shulchan, hare basar, hare sakin, ve'en lanu peh lechol. Very descriptive phrase. He says, we have here, he's trying to, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, we have here a whole mission, we don't understand it. So he says, we have the table, we have the meat, we have the knife, we're ready to eat, but we don't have a mouth with which to eat it. Meaning, as we said, we have here a Mishnah, and no one can explain it. Well, we have explanations. You can see as we go on in the Mishnah, we have underlined Rav Ushmuel and call them number one. And then a few lines afterwards, Rav Ami, we've underlined calling him number two. I want to point out, before we go any further, that this section of Gemara is going to be the focus of the Gemara on the Mem Zayin Omid Aleph. If you have Mem Zayin Omid Aleph in front of you, so let me just want to make you aware of this. Several lines before the Gemara lines get wide, about seven up lines before they get wide on Daf Mem Zayin Aleph. If you have it, you'll see the Gemara there is saying Honicha Leman Domar Aseifa Koid. Honicha means that things will work out there on Daf Mem Zayin according to the Man Domar Aseifa Koid. That's a reference to Rabbi Ami, the number two opinion that we're going to see here, who says Li'olam Aseifa. So what's going to be very important is to have great clarity in this section of Gemara in order to appreciate what the Gemara will be saying on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. So let's continue. Rav Ushmuel Amri Travayu Li'olam Aresha. The Mishnah case of Hoysa Oicheles Rishona Rishona, and we said she's not going to be considered married until there is a Shavu Pruta in one of the dates, is a commentary on the Resha of the Mishnah. Where the man said to the woman, Hiskachi li b'tmora zu, Hiskachi li b'zu. And we continue. Velo mibaya komar. And the Mishnah is taught in the lo mibaya form. The lo mibaya form will become clear very, very, very shortly when we read the Gemara. But the lo mibaya means I don't have to tell you. In other words, I'm going to tell you something now that is so obvious or it doesn't need to be told. So let's see. The lo mibaya koman. The Mishnah form is in the lo mibaya form. Lo mibaya manachas. I don't have to tell you about a case of a man who is saying his kachili b'tomorrow zoo. and hiskatshili bazu, and she's not eating them at all. Manachas means she's leaving them there on the table. She's the manachas is something that's lying there. She's not eating them. To iiko shove pruto in ilo lo. In a case like that, it's obvious that there would have to be a shove pruto in one of those dates. And if there isn't a shove pruto in any of those dates, she won't be considered married. So that's obvious. Aval Ocheles. But the case of Ocheles, which is featured at the end of the Mishnah, that's not as obvious. It needs to be taught. Why is it not so obvious? Aval Ocheles Hoyol Umikrivo Hanyosa. Since the pleasure, Hanyosa is her pleasure, the pleasure that she gets in eating them. Rashi on the first line under the Gemara text says, Umikrivo Hanyosa. The pleasure is right there. The pleasure in eating the dates is prepared and resting right in front of her, and she reveals her desires by the very fact that she starts eating those dates. So since there's this element of pleasure and satisfaction that is of an immediate nature, Emo, I would have said without the Mishnah, Gomro Umakne Nafsha, she's willing to give herself over in marriage, even if there isn't a Shove Pruta value in any one of the dates. By the fact that she's eating them, it might have shown us, it might have been a demonstration of her great satisfaction and willingness to give herself over in marriage, even without any one of them having a pruta worth of value. Kol Mashmalon, our Mishnah tells us that even in the case of Eicheles, we still have that requirement that one of them had to have a pruta worth of value. And that's because he said, Hiskachi li b'tmorazu, Hiskachi li b'zu, he itemized it. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Ami Omar. Rabbi Ami says, Lioilama Seifa. The case of Hoysa Echeles is going on the Seifa, where it said, Bazu, 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 where that's what he said to her. Umay Ad Shihei Ba'achas Mehen Shofa Pruta. What does that mean? Because when we read it initially, the Gemara said, well, as long as there is in one of them a Shavar Buddha, we said, well, that could mean even if in the first one that she's already eaten. But that's a milveh. So it doesn't mean that. Rather, it means, Ashihei Bachroina Shavar Pruta. Until there is a Shavar Pruta in the last one, where at that point he finished speaking, and then she pops it into her mouth. Well, what's she popping into her mouth at that point? He finished his marriage offer. So, and that last date that's there, if it has a shofar pruta, she'll be married. That last date, she's not eating as a milveh. It's not, as we said before, a non-marriage related date, because he's already finished his offer. Omar Rova. Shmamino mid Rabbi Ami Tlas. From Rabbi Ami, who explained the Mishnah as he did, we can reach three halachic conclusions. Number one, Shmamino Hamekadesh Bemilva Eino Mekudeshes. We explained this essentially already. One who marries a woman in exchange for relieving her of money that she owes him, she wouldn't be considered married. Rabbi Ami insisted on explaining the Mishnah, Ad Shitei Bachsmem, Ad Shitei Bachrona. Only if the last one has a Shofar Pruta will she be considered married. If any of the previous dates had a Shofar Pruta, it wouldn't have helped her in getting married. Why not? Because all those previous dates were considered non-marriage dates. Why? Because he didn't finish his marriage offer. So we consider them a milveh, money that she would otherwise owe to him. So we conclude, hamekalish b'milveh, ena mekudeshes. That would be a conclusion you would reach from Rabbi Ami's approach. Number two, ushma mina, hamekadesh b'milveh upruta, daito apruta. If a man had offered a woman marry me in exchange for, he says, I'm going to relieve you of a large loan that you owe me, and take this pruta as well. Very something small, very insignificant, something having the minimum money value to it, and she accepts that deal, she'll be married. How do you see that from this Mishnah? Well, from the fact that he had offered her many dates. Those other dates might have had quite a greater value than the last one. But she's married with the last one, as long as it had a minimum value of a pruta. So that even though all the earlier dates that she's already eaten are considered like a milveh, nevertheless, she is considered married by virtue of the fact that the last one has a pruta worth of value. And hence we conclude, hamekadesh b'milveh pruta, her mind is on the pruta, her mind is on that little amount, the last one. Let us look at Rashi on this as well, five lines up from the end of Rashi. Shma mina pruta, milveh daita pruta. Midishanya lemasnis and hachi, from the fact that Rabbi Ami explained the Mishnah the way he did, techiyesh b'achroina shavar pruta mikudeshes, that if in the last date there is a shavar pruta worth of value, she'll be married. V'yafagav de kamaisa milva havya b'hada, even though the earlier ones were considered like a milva, like a loan, money she owed him, and they are together with that last one. Ubekulu kidsha. He was marrying her with all of them. Had she not been eating them, then it would have been, as remember, Rav Ami was saying that the Hoysochel's case is going on the bazoo situation. That was a klola. That's where all of them could have joined together to equal the pruta. So they're all together, so to speak, in his offer of marriage. The Ko'omar, the Imyesh, Bekulam, Shavar Pruta, Mikudeshes. And we had said in the Bazu section of the Mishnah, if there's a Pruta worth of value in all of them, she would be married, even without a Pruta in any one of them. Almo, Kiddushi Akulu Kaimi. You can see that his offer of marriage had relevance to all of the dates. Nevertheless, in the case of Ocheles, where she was eating them before he finished his offer, davluhu milveh upruta. So, since she was eating them before he finished his marriage offer, they are viewed as a milveh. And the last one that was there before she, where he finished before she ate it, is the pruta. Mekudeshes b'achrona, she's married through the last date. So we conclude this second point. And we continue at the top of Omid Beis, the third conclusion. Ushma mina mois ba'alma chayzrin. Now if we translate it, it'll have absolutely no meaning. We conclude that money in general is to be returned. In order to appreciate that, we look at the Tosfos commentary. Ushma mina mois ba'alma chayzrin pirush. Im Omar law, his kachi bepruto zu, ubazu, ubazu. Uba oid shalo nigmaru hakidushin chozar bo milakacha. He intended to offer her several coins, several pruto coins, and he said, be married to me with this and with this and with this. And before he finished what he intended to say, He reversed himself. Lo amrinon, we are not going to say de lehevu hamois shemosa lo kedem hachazora matona, that all the coins that he was offering her, that he had given her before his reversal, she can keep as a gift. Elo pikadon hu etzla v'chayzim lo. They are entrusted coins. And since he backed out, she would give them back to him. That's mois balmo. Cash in general would be returned. The main thing may have been left out of that phrase, would be returned if he backs out in the middle of his offer of marriage and she doesn't keep them as a gift. V'hochinami amrinon. And likewise we say kishomar lo hiskachi b'tomora zu ubazu ubazu uba'oid shelo gomar diburo ochlo harishonu shnia. And she was popping them into her mouth while he was making the offer to her, and she was eating them before he finished his marriage offer. Let's read that phrase again. Masha ochla, that which she ate, milve hein etzla. They're considered like borrowed money, borrowed value. They're not a gift. V'lo yochulu, there won't set in the marriage. Elamashu bein, only that which is still extant, that's still around. V'lochein v'lokach tzor pruta b'achrona, and therefore we were insisting that there be a pruta worth of value left at the end. De'i amris mois b'almo matona. If you were to say that in general monies that she receives before he completes his marriage offer, he's offering her coins one after the other, and before he and each coin is considered a gift, even though he hasn't finished his offer. V'lo bayala druinu hecha degomar dvorov L'shem Kiddushim. Let's just read that phrase again. Start going back 3-4 lines in the Tosfos. Di amris mois ba'almo matona. If you were to say otherwise, that the money that he's giving to her one after the other is viewed as a gift. Ve'echad lo nigmu hakiddushin havu hamois rishonim matonetz lo. And the first monies that she received when he didn't finish the kiddushin would be considered a gift for the bayala adurino, and she wouldn't have to return them. Well, hecho de gomar dvorov l'shem kiddushin, where he in fact finishes, he doesn't back out, but he finishes his offer for marriage, kihocha, like in our case, nemo, then we would have been able to say diochlu hakiddushim afal osan tmorim shena boilam, that the kiddushin would have been effected through even those dates that are no longer around. V'chi ochla, and when she was eating them, midi do ochla, she was eating something that is hers. Well, as you can see, we don't say all of that by the fact that Rabbi Ami was insisting on Atshe when he said there has to be in the last date a shove pruta. Up till that point, the marriage offer had not been completed, and as we have explained, Mois Balmo Chozrin, in the event that he were to back out in the middle and reverse his intent to marry her, she would have to return anything that she had received up till that point. We're not going to continue with the Tosfos, but we are going to now turn back to the Gemara and take note of the very unusual in terms of length, unusual structure. It's not unusual in the sense that we have a bracketed section. We see many times bracketed sections, but here you can see it's a very long bracketed section. In fact, this whole omid of Gemara theoretically could be learned as a separate discussion. We have a note on the side, and by a starred note that reads as follows: Hezbollah Sagrayim. Sagrayim Elu L'Shem Diluk. These brackets are for skipping purposes. Yesh lulmoid me Omar Rova. Omar Rova is at the end of this omid, the last two words. We should really be learning from Omar Rova ad Omar Rav on Mem Zayin Omid Aleph. You'll see that on the first wide line of Mem Zayin Omid Aleph, there's a firebox around Rav. So that the section of Gemara from the end of this page, from the end of this omid Gemara until the end of the narrow lines, until the first wide line on Mem Zayin Aleph, we should be picking up with right now. The note continues, V'achar kach lumud sugis hamakadash yisoy b'soychas agraim. And then, to turn back to the Gemara here, that's within the brackets, that's called a man who tries to marry his sister, offers her money. That's the sugya of hamakadash yisoy. HaGemara achrei asugrayim, the Gemara after the brackets, mamshicha lisyaches linyone hamishnah upirusha. The Gemara, at the end, after the brackets, continues referring to our Mishnah and how to explain our Mishnah. And that's what we've been doing just now. We've been involved with trying to explain the Mishnah, the Hoysoy Cheles case of the Mishnah. Is it going on the Reisha? Is it going on the Seifa? And the Gemara continues with that. Kamo Kain, HaGemara, Adom Arav, Mitapeles, B'mikrim, Doimim, L'mishnah Senu. And the Gemara will also feature cases that are similar to the Mishnah there on the next Omid Mem Zayin Omid Aleph. So it would make a lot of sense to skip this bracketed section and read the Gemara as we just suggested while we're still in that mindset, meaning we're still preoccupied with explaining the Mishnah. Things are fresh. B'soch HaSograyim Kemes Sugya Nifredis. Within the bracketed section, there's a separate topic. Machlekes Rav uShmuel b'nimekadish is a choisei, disagreement between Rav and Shmuel regarding someone who offers money to his sister in attempting to marry her. Ve'ech litiaches l'mashenitan l'matora, and how to relate to something that was given l'matora mesuyemes for a specific purpose, like the money given to your sister for marriage. So you gave her marriage money, but bizman she yadua shoyse matora ena basa soga. While at the same time you know that the goal that you're trying to achieve is unachievable. Kagon hamakadish achoso, one who tries to marry a sister, you can't marry your sister. Offer, and so the offering of money to her, you know it's not going to work. So ma din hamos, what's the law regarding the money that she received from you? What do you do with the money? What is its status? There's another case. Hamafrish chala mikema. Chala is the name of a tithe that one separates from dough, assuming they've prepared a minimum, the minimum required amount of dough for the chala tithe to be required. And before making it into dough, after pouring the flour into the bowl, You scoop out some flour and offer that to the Kohen, who's the receiver of this tithe we call challah. Bizman sheyadua de challah mafrish misa. While it's well known that challah, the challah tithe, is separated from dough, not from flour. Dough is something that the Kohen will say has immediate use from. He can bake it. Give him flour, so he has to matriach, has to trouble himself to make it into dough. That's an idea that you see the Gemara expresses along the way, but it is in fact based on a pasuk that we know that the challah tithe is from dough. Reishis arisos echem. Arisos echem is a word referring to kneading troughs. So that which you find in a kneading trough, that's dough. So what we're going to do is follow our own advice, and we'll, Mirtz Hashem, come back to this omid of Gemara. But since we are still fresh in our minds, our Mishnah and the machlokes between Rav Shmuel versus Rabbi Ami in how to explain the Mishnah, and the Mishnah describing Hoysoy Cheles, and the Mishnah saying that in the case of Hoysoy Cheles there has to be a Shofar Pruta in Ba'achas Mehen, we skip now to the bottom of of Daf Mem Vavomid Beis Omar Rava. We continue at the top of Daf Mem Zayin. Lo Shanu, and here you have a key expression. Lo Shanu means it. The Mishnah was not taught. Elo the Omar Law Bazu Bazu Bazu. In other words, in the Mishnah we saw a woman eating one by one, and we said that they don't join together to be worth a pruta. Either way, whether you follow Rav Shmuel or you follow Rabbi Ami, the dates that she was popping into her mouth were not joining together. That point that they don't join together is where he said to her, Bazu, Ubazu, Ubazu. Aval Omar Lo Bielu, had he said to the woman, they were sitting together at a table, there was a bowl of dates, and he said, Be mekudeshes to me with these, Bielu, Afilu Ocheles Nami mekudeshes. Even if after he says that she starts eating them, she'll be married. Rashi says on the top, Lo Shanu, Heicha de Ocheles Rishona Rishona de Eim Meseves Leputa, that which the Mishnah taught that when she was eating one after the other, they don't join together to a pruta worth of value. That's El Domar Law Bazu Bazu Bazu. The Lo Gamri Kiddushin, he didn't finish his offer of marriage. Velo Nikne Law Ad Nesina Achrona, they don't become hers until the very last one that's given to her. She Gemar Diburo, that's the completion of his offer of marriage. Kvar Hoyo Rishonus Milve, those that she had already eaten before he finished his offering of them to her as marriage value. So what were they? They were a milva, like a loan. Aval Be'elu Mikabolas HaRishona Lo Bosa Liyada B'Toras Milve. If he said, be Mekudesh to me with these, with a bowl full of dates, so from the first one already that she takes, she's not receiving that as a loan. The Mishin Nigmar HaDibor Hikne Lo B'Toras Kiddushin. As soon as he finished his speech, his offer, he said, "Hiskachili be'elu." That's it. He finished. He finished his speech. At that point, they're hers. They're hers. What as kiddushin, v'chi achlo, and when she eats it, mididoko achlo. She's eating that which is hers, not alone. She's eating something she had received as a total. Let's say call it a gift, an offering for marriage. V'afilu achlo rishona rishona mikudeshes im yesh bekulon shavapruta. Even if she started eating them one by one, it, as long as all of them together were worth a pruta of value, she is married. In other words, Rashi, I think at the end when he says afilu ochla rishona rishona, one should not think that in order for her to be married she'd have to stuff the whole bowl of dates into her mouth at one point, because that way she's eating a shava pruta worth of value. That's not necessary. She received a shava pruta worth of value. And even if she eats them one by one, she nevertheless is considered married. So we continue in the Gemara. Let's read the second line of the Gemara again. Avol Omar Lo Be'elu Afilo Echeles Nami Mekudeshes. Why? Ki ka'ochla, at that point that she's eating, midenafsha ka'ochla, she's eating that which is hers. Nafsha means something that is given to her, that is exclusively hers. Tanyo kavose derova. And here we have a long point. On the side of the Gemara, by the way, we have a topic heading, when we call din shel rova, amas nisin koi, rova's din is referring to the Mishnah, Matzorich shiehei ba'achas minatmorim shover pruta. Mosai, let me read that again. Mosai tzorich shiehei ba'achas minatmorim shover pruta. Mosai efshaloma shemitstarfin le shover pruta. Under what circumstances do we say that there has to be a shover pruta in one of them? And under what circumstances do we say that even if in one of them there isn't a shover pruta, but altogether they're worth a shover pruta, she will nevertheless be married? And we explained that already. At this point, you can see we have a long nekuda, long point. What's the long point? So the Gemara brings a brisa. It says, Tanya Kavosi de Rav. We have a Tanaic source supporting Rava. The Gemara will spend all of this time as part of the long point in explaining how you see that this Tanaic source supports Rava. The Tanaic source itself is made up of, we'll say, of three parts: a resha, a metziosa, and a seifa. A resha, beginning part; metziosa, middle part; and seifa, end part. Generally, we don't dwell on this we'll call elementary level of structural introduction with regard to Tanaic sources, but you'll see when we get into the Gemara, we'll have to be very sensitive to how to break down this source. So we're telling you ahead of time that the basic breakdown is, as we said, there are three parts to the source. We continue now in the Gemara. Tanya Kavose de Rava. We have a Tanaic source supporting Rava that made a distinction between a case where he said Hiskachi li be'elu versus a case where he says Hiskachi li bezu ubezu ubezu. If you want to view this on a rather superficial or elementary level, there's a difference between a man who's offering a bowl of dates in marriage in exchange for a woman's agreement to marrying him, whether he presents the dates in a bazoo, ubazoo, ubazoo fashion, referring to each date, versus a case where he says, be mekudeshes to me with all of the dates, beilu, all of them together. What is the difference? The difference is going to be in a case where she is eating them one by one. If he had said, be mekudeshes to me, bazoo, 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 then we're going to be insistent on the a shava pruta in one of them. If, according to Rabami, in the last one. If, however, he said, hiskachi be'elu, and she starts eating them one by one, then there doesn't have to be a shava pruta value in any one of the dates. As long as the entire bowl of dates together is worth a shava pruta, she will be married. So now we continue with the source. Hiskachi li ba'oloin berimon ubegos. Three different types of fruits. The necessity of translating them is not of any urgency. Rashi explains what an olon is. He gives you a French word. Rimon is often translated as a pomegranate, and egos as a nut. But once again, what we have to note is they have three fruits being offered to her. So he says, "Be mekudeshes to me, ba'olon, ba'rimon, ube'egos." So Amar lo, hiskachi li be'elu. Or he doesn't itemize them. He says, "Be mekudeshes to me with them." Im yesh bekulon shove pruta mekudeshes. If there's a shove pruta worth of value in all of them, she's married. V'im lav, eino mekudeshes. And if not, so she will not be considered married. Now the middle section of the Mishnah. By the way, we're referring to this as the middle, but this phenomenon appears throughout the Shas. Sections, locations are relative, so that this is the middle of the Tanaic source relative to the whole source. But relative to the beginning, this section could be called the Seifa, the end. It's the end of that which preceded it. It's also the beginning of that which comes after it. So the terms that we use, resha and seifa, are oftentimes relative to their positioning regarding other things stated. But on a superstructure level, looking at this source from above, this is called the Mitzyosa. Once again, why are we dwelling on this? So we mentioned why before. And in addition, Rashi himself uses the word Mitzyosa at a certain point in his commentary. So we continue. Bazoo. He says, be married to me with this and with this and with this. Im yesh bekulon shove pruta mikudeshes. If altogether they're worth a shove pruta, she'll be married. Vim lav, eino mikudeshes. And if not, she's not married. Very similar structure to the resha in terms of, we'll say, the requirements. Im yesh bekulon versus vim lav. And that's why we have a dash underlining the way we've done it. We continue. This is the Seifa. Bezu notlosoi v'achotoi. He says, be mukadeshes with this one. And she pops it into her mouth and eats it. Bezu notloso v'achloso. V'yoid bezu. Eino mukadeshes ad she ba'achas mehen shove pruta. She won't be considered married until there is in one of them a shava pruta. I suppose that this is familiar. There is a certain similarity in this source to that which we saw in the Mishnah. At this point, though, we're not interested in dwelling on the how similar or not similar they are. That will be the focus of the discussion later when we get to, I mentioned earlier, the seven lines before the Gemara gets wide. At that point in the Gemara, we'll have to pay attention to this Braisa and the Mishnah. Are they similar or not? Can they be analyzed the same way or not? But in the meantime, we continue. Hi, in the Gemara. Hi, ba'olon barimon be'egoyz. Hechi domi. When the man said to the woman, be married to me with the Olon, Rimon, and Egos, what was happening? What was he saying exactly? E lame of the Omar law. Oiba Olon, Oiba Rimon, Oiba Egos. Be married to me either with the Olon or with the pomegranate or with the nut. The quote from above was, Im yesh bekulon shavu pruta mikudeshes. It said there, if altogether there's a shava pruta, meaning even if in one of them there wasn't a shava pruta worth of value, that's okay. As long as altogether they equal a shava pruta, she'll be married. But that can't be. For oi komar, if you're going to go like suggestion number one, that he said to her, oi ba'olon, oi ba'rimon, the word oi separates each one from the other. Be married to me through the olon or the rimon or the nut. How can you say they join together, that all together, if they have a shofar pruta, she'd be married? That's not so. He separated them. In such a case, then, we'd be interested in there being a shofar pruta in one of them. Viela? So what did he say? Ba'olon, uberimoin, ubeegois. He said to her, hiskachi li, ba'olon, uberimoin, ubeegois. Well then, hainu, Bazoo. That's already taught in the Mitzyosa of the Mishnah. It would be then a redundancy. Be married to me with this, with this, with this. So the opening line of the Mishnah wouldn't be simply something repeated in the middle of this Tanaic source. Not Mishnah, it's a Braisa. So that's not the case either. Ela lav. Rather, it must be the Omar law be'elu. He said, be mekudeshes to me with these. And the these that he was referring to was an olon, rimon, and egos. We ask, ha midekotoni seifa. Now here the word seifa is tricky. It means the seifa of the resha. It means that there was an opening line to the Mishnah, iskachli bolon, rimon, and egos. And then after that there was a continuation. That's the word seifa over here. It doesn't mean, it's not a reference to seifa that we mentioned earlier, the third section of the source, but it's a reference to the continuation of essentially the first line. We have a little star to the side of the Gemara, the left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align it with the star above, and you see where this was. How can you say that the opening line of the Mishnah, namely Hiskat Shili, Bolam Rimon Egos, is where he said, Be'elu, Ha'midiktani Seifa, Oisho Amar Lo Hiskat Shili Be'elu, the Mishnah said, the Brisa that is said, or if he said to her, Be Mekudeshes to me, Be'elu. So you see that the Be'elu phrasing appears, but not at the opening line. Michlau Deresho, Lav Be'elu Askinon, it must be that the opening of his offer, of the opening case, his Kachili Balim Rimon Egos, was not with Elu. That was mentioned. It's true, but not at the opening. Not at the opening phrase. The Gemara says, not true. It really is part of the opening phrase. Pirushe ko meforesh, meaning the whole resha is to be understood in terms of an offer in the Be'elu form. Elu meaning altogether. Hiskachi li ba'olon berimon be'egos keitzad, and how was he offering the olon, rimon, and egos? Kagon di'amar lo, hiskachi li be'elu. That's what he said. Vikotoni seifa. Again, the trick. The seifa here is a reference to the seifa of the entire source. And what did it say there? And again, we have a little arrow to the left-hand side. You can see where it's quoted from. It said in the seifa of the entire source, Bezu not loso v'achlosoi. I want to emphasize that in the mitziah, in the middle of the source, it taught only the case of Bezu u'bezu u'bezu. In the Seifa, it says, Bezu not loso v'yachlosai. Im yesh ba'achas mehen shove pruta mekudeshes. If in one of them there's a shove pruta, she's married. V'im lav eino mekudeshes. And if in any one of them there isn't a shove pruta, she won't be considered married. The ilu resha, the resha we explained already, was speaking about a case of Be'elu. Lo komaflig made no distinction bein oicheles lemanachas. No distinction. Whether she was eating them or she left them alone, she left them on the table. So where do you see this distinction? When you look at the middle, the mitziosa and the seifa, when you look at them together, you see this distinction. In the Mitziasa, there was no reference to eating. So the Mitziasa would have been, he said to her, Mikudeshes to me, Bazoo, Bazoo, Bazoo. There we said, if in even though in any one of them there isn't a Shavapruta, that's okay as long as all together there's a Shavapruta. Why is that so? Why are we making that allowance of imyesh bekulon shofar pruta shall be mekudeshes? The reason for that is that she wasn't eating them, so they were all together, they could join up. However, if he said to her bazoo, and before he finished his speech, she already popped it into his mouth, you'll notice that the seifa is like the Mitzios in the sense that he's not saying Be'elu. He's saying Bazoo, Bazoo, Bazoo. But in the Seifa, she's not leaving them. She's not. It's not Manachas. She's eating them. So the Gemara points out that in the Resha of the Mishnah where he said Be'elu, there's no mention of her eating it because there's no difference whether she leaves them there or eats them one by one. That's as far as the ratio is concerned. As far as the Seifa is a continuation of the Mitziasa. There you do see a distinction between leaving them versus eating them one by one. So, Shma Mino, the Gemara continues, Shma Mino, Kol Hecho Diomer Lo Bielu, wherever the man offered her the group of fruits using the Elu type offer, Kikochla, when she then starts eating, Binafsho Kochla, she's eating that which is hers anyway. Shma Mino. So this is proof to what Rava had said, that if the offer was made in the Be'elu form, as long as all the fruits together have a Shava Pruta worth of value, she'll be married. Even if she starts eating them after he said Be'elu one by one, she's married. And if, however, he didn't offer her marriage in the Be'elu form, but rather he started mentioning them in the Bezu, Ubezu, Ubezu form, if she left them on the table, didn't eat them until he finished his offer, so we can say as long as altogether there's a Shava Pruta worth of vows, she'll be married, even if in any one of them there wasn't, that's okay. However, if he says bazoo and she pops it in her mouth, and again bazoo and she pops it in her mouth, then we're not going to be able to look at all of them as being as adding up to a Shava Pruta worth of value. Rather, there would have to be in one of them a Shava Pruta worth of value. So that's how this source is a support to Rava. Now, we have a period. If you see it in our mark, Gemaras, the period is although a very small marking, it's of great significance. Because as you go on in the Gemara, you see the word ha-nicha. Generally speaking, ha-nicha is a continuation of the thought flow that immediately preceded it. Not so over here. And Rashi is basically is super sensitive to Gemara structure, as those who are veterans of Gemara markings know that we like to highlight from time to time Rashi's that serve as a support for our marking system and for comments that we make between the lines. Look at Rashi, it's a bit up from here, third of the way down from the top, there's a Rashi says ha nicha, and immediately says lav l'rova parchinon. This hanicha is not a comment on Rava, who immediately preceded this, but elo li'el koi. This is a throwback to that which was before, at this point a long time ago. We explained the last section of the Mishnah, the last phrase of the Mishnah, where she was eating. The end of the Mishnah, the Rav Shmuel Aresha, the Rav Ami Asefa. Rav and Shmuel took that phrase, Hoyser Cheles, as being an explanation of the Resha of the Mishnah. Hiskachi Li, if you recall, and it's very, very helpful to have the Daf Mem Vov Omen Aleph in front of you as we look at this section, so that in the Rav and Shmuel approach, the case of Hoyser Cheles of the Mishnah was a commentary on the man offering her the marriage, his kachli b'tomorrow zu, his kachli b'zu, as opposed to Reb Ami's approach, who said it was a continuation of the Seifa of the Mishnah. So with that in mind, our Gemara continues. Ha nicha, things will work out. Now, we're not explaining yet what's going to work out. We're just saying things will work out. We'll see what works out as we go on in the Gemara. But things will work out. Laman diomar asefa koi. According to Reb Ami's approach to the Mishnah on Memvav, Umay ad sheba achas mehen shava pruta. And what did that phrase of the Mishnah on Memvav, Omen Aleph, mean? Ad she boachroina shava pruta. It meant that in the case that she was eating them one by one, there would have to be a Shava Pruta in the last one. So, Achi Ba'achas means, in the Mishnah, according to Rabami, Achi Ba'achronon, until there is in the last one a Shava Pruta. Oh! Hachinami! So too in our Tanaic source above, in the Brisa above, Ad Shehei Bachroino Shover Pruta. There was a very similar case. The end of the Mishnah, the what we call the Seifa of the, I say Mishnah is a mistake, means the Brisa above. It in the Seifa, it read Bezu not losa vechlosa, Bezu not losa vechlosa, very similar to the case in the Mishnah. And the Brisa also said Ad Shehei Bachzmem Shover Pruta, according to Rav Ami, who used the same explanation. It means until there is in the last one a Shover Pruta. The Brisa above had essentially, we'll call a Kloli format. There was no Prati separation or itemization in the same way as we saw in the Mishnah. So when you had a Kloli format, until he finished his speech, there wasn't a completion of the marriage offer. And if she was eating them in the interim, then we'll insist on the last one having a Shava Pruta. So, in simple terms, Rav Ami's approach to the Mishnah could be superimposed on the Brisa above, and things are smooth. Ella. La Ravu Shmuel de Amri Travayo Are Shokoi. But according to Rav and Shmuel, on Mem Vov Amun Aleph, that said that the case of Hoysa Oicheles in the Mishnah on Daf Mem Vov was a comment on the Resha. The Oicheles it's the Richole. And if you recall, when Rav and Shmuel said that the Hoysa Oicheles case and the Mishnah's requirement, Acheba Achsman Shavapruta, is a comment on the Resha, and in the Resha we saw that there was prati, there was a separate marriage offer, and as each fruit was offered to her separately. And Rav and Shmuel explained that the Mishnah is in the Lo Mibaya format. I don't have to tell you that there has to be a Shavar Pruta when she's not eating them, but there has to be a Shavar Pruta even in the case where she is eating them. It didn't have to be a Shavar Pruta in the last fruit, because each one was really a separate marriage offer. So at any given point, he had completed his marriage offer at any given point. It's Gatzli B'tmarzu, that's an offer. So, and if there is a Shavar Pruta in that one, fine, even though it's not the last fruit that he mentioned necessarily. It's not the last date that he mentioned, but each date was a separate offer. So according to Rav and Shmuel, we didn't have to change the meaning of the Mishnah at the end. As long as in one of them there's a Shavar Pruta worth of value, she will be married. So that was Rav and Shmuel regarding the connection between Hoysa Cheles and one of the earlier parts of the Mishnah, according to them, the first part of the Mishnah, where there was a proti format. What about in this Brisa? Is there a proti format? Well, it doesn't look like that. We explained this Brisa already, as the opening of it was when we said Tanya Kovasi the Rav, we said the opening was a case of Be'elu, that's the ultimate in the Kloli format, joining them all together. Likewise, Bezu, Bezu, Bezu was also a Kloli format. There wasn't a separate Hiskachi, Hiskachi. So the entire Brisa above looks like a Kloli format. In order for the Rav Ushmul approach that we saw in the Mishnah to be effective over here, you'd have to have an illustration of a proti format, which you don't see. And yet at the end of this Brisa, we saw the expression Achie ba'achas man shava pruta, until there's a shava pruta in one of them. And according to Rav and Shmuel, it didn't mean in the last one. So we ask, according to Rav and Shmuel, that in the Mishnah, the Oicheles case was going on the Resha, and we said the Oicheles is the Richole, and their chidush was that I need to tell you, even the case of Oicheles, even though Hanosa Mikrova Hanosa, there has to be a Shavar Pruta in one of them. halacha, when it comes to this braisa, kloli kochashiv, prati lo kochashiv. We only have a kloli format of marriage offer. We don't have a prati format of marriage offer. So if you don't have a prati format, how are Rav and Shmuel going to relate to the last line of the braisa above, which said, Atshe ba'achas me'an shavar puta? What is that going to mean? The Gemara answers, Ha money Rebihi. The Seifa of this braisa is a new Tana. He's not the same author as the earlier part of the braisa. The Seifa, where it said, Bezuna, Losva Chosu, etc., that is in accordance with Rebbe. Rebbe is very different than the opinion of Rebbe Shimon, for example, that we saw earlier. Because according to Rebbe de Omar Lo Shna. Now here, the Gemara makes reference to a sugya that's not found over here. It's a sugya that deals with kochim, with the korbonos matters, with the machsheves pigol. But we're not going to delve into that. It's Rashi does. Rashi gives you all of the background. But you'll see, it's sufficient to recognize that according to Rebbe, lo shna kezayas kezayas, v'lo shna kezayas u kezayas, prota havi. Even with saying something in the kezayas u kezayas format, or Bazoo, ubazoo, ubazoo, proto havi. That's considered a proti format. Therefore, according to Rebbe, you don't need to have, as Reb Shimon required, hiskachi li bazoo, hiskachi li bazoo. Even without that, hiskachi li bazoo, ubazoo, ubazoo is nevertheless considered a proti format. And as such, the case of the woman eating them after he makes an offer to her like that, we insist on there being a shoveh pruto in one of them. Because each reference to the fruits, bazoo, ubazoo, ubazoo, each fruit is viewed on its own. Even though if you were to look at things without, not through the eyes of Rebbe, the vav of the word ubazoo, ubazoo would seem to connect all of them together. Not so according to Rebbe. So according to Rebbe, the explanation of Rav and Shmuel of Atshe ba'achas man shavruta that they gave to the Mishnah will have validity to the Braisa as well, because as we said, the Seifa is in accordance with Rebbe, and the bezu not losa v'chosa, bezu not losa v'chosa, could very well have been coming on the heels of his offering her marriage, hiskachili bezu bezu bezu, or hiskachili bezu ubezu ubezu. That doesn't matter. Each fruit is viewed as a separate offer of marriage, and as the Braisa says at the end, as long as there is a pruta worth of value in any one of them, she will be considered married. Because each fruit was a separate marriage offer, and you're not getting involved whatsoever in any situation Makadish Bemilveh. Because, as we said, each fruit mentioned by him was the completion of a specific offer of marriage. Of course, we skipped quite a long section. We skipped the entire Mem Vav Amid Beis. So now we go back to that. Our hope is in Gemara markings, where we place a great amount of emphasis on Gemara structure as being a major element in understanding the Daf Gemara. I hope that what we did here will be helpful, even though we did skip a long section. We're now going to go back to it and view it as a separate sugya. So now, as we turn back to the top of Mem Vav Amit Beis, we glance at the side of the Gemara. We have a nosei, a topic heading. We already made reference to this earlier, but let's do it again. The nosei, topic reading, says, Hamekadesh Achoisoi, one who offers marriage money to his sister, Machloikis Rav Ushmuel, Mois Choizren, according to Rav, the money that she received will have to be given back to her brother. It wasn't given to her as a gift, but rather as we call a pikodon, as entrusted money. And Mois Matona, according to Shmuel, the money is really offered to her as a gift. I'm sure everyone is thinking, well, if those were what the respective intentions were, why does he offer money to his sister as marriage, which is kind of ridiculous? Speak straight. Either I'm giving this to watch, or I'm giving this as a gift. The Gemara. Itmar, Hamekadesh Achoso, one who marries his sister. Marries his sister means he's giving her money in exchange for her acceptance of marriage, which, as we said, is a joke. Rav Omar, Mois Choisrin. Rav says the money is to be given back. Ushmuel Omar, Mois Matona. Shmuel holds that the money that the brother gave his sister is really a gift. We've highlighted with a diamond, I think it's obvious, the opinions of Rav and Shmuel with their respective explanations. And the same question will be asked, which we have a double underline, which in each case the Gemara will ask, why doesn't he speak to her in a straightforward fashion? And let's see now the Gemara itself. Rav Omar, Mois Choisrin, Adam Yodea, She'ein Kiddushin Toivsin Bachoso. Rav says the money is chosim, is returned. A person knows that kiddushin does not take hold with his sister. The gomar v'nosan l'shum pikadon, and he gave it to her with the intention of her watching the money for him. V'leim alah l'shum pikadon. Why doesn't he say to her straight out, "I'm giving this to watch"? Sovar, the brother is thinking, lo mekabla. If I ask her to watch the money for me, she won't accept it. Ushmuel Sovar, Mois Matona. Odom Yodea Shein Kiddushin Toivsin Bachoso. Everyone knows that marriage cannot take hold with one's sister. V'gomer v'nosan l'shum matona. And he gave it to her as a gift. V'neim ola l'shum matona. Why doesn't he speak in a straightforward fashion, "I'm giving this to you as a gift"? Sovar ksifolo milsa, she is ksifo means embarrassed. She would be embarrassed to receive it as a gift. Now the Gemara asks, and on the side of the Gemara we have a tatnose, a subtopic heading. Makshim al Shmuel, we're going to be asking on Shmuel's approach, mimafrish chalosoi kemach, from the case of someone who tithes his dough before it reaches a dough stage. He tithes it in the flour stage. This situation is being brought in. What's the common denominator between this and what was just mentioned? Well, the common denominator is going to be the idea of Odom Yodea. People know certain things, and once people know certain things that cannot be, what's the result? So we saw in the case of Shmuel, the offer of marriage money to a sister, which we said cannot be. So what was the result? The result was it's a gift. Here you have, in a similar sense, something's being offered to a Kohen. Instead of a sister, something's offered to a Kohen. Flour as opposed to dough. Everyone knows that flour is not the means of accomplishing the challah tithe. So now, what's the result? So the Gemara asks, and we're going to ask on Shmuel. Mosiv Ravina, Hamafrish chalosoi kemach, someone who tithes the challah tithe in its pre-dough stage, in its flours, at the flour stage, eino challah. It's not effective. The gezel biyad kohen, and if he doesn't return it, if the kohen receives it and doesn't return it, he's holding something that is, as far as we're concerned, is theft. He doesn't have it coming to him. As you look on in the Gemara, you'll see extensive use of triangles. On the side, under our Mivneh heading, the triangle represents a makav, an attempt to keep track. The triangle point facing upwards, kushios, they represent questions. Why Loma Chayev Lachzira? Why does he have to return it? In other words, if Shmuel is correct, why does he have to return it? And the inverted triangles will appear as responses. So now we continue in the Gemara. Ve'amai Gezel Biyad Kohen. Why does the source say that the unreturned flower would be like theft? Nemo, why not say what we said above? Odom Yodea Shein Mafishim Chalo Kema Venosan L'Shem Matona. That L'Shem Matona is what we saw above with regard to Shmuel. A person knows you can't marry your sister, so that which was given to her was a gift. So to hear, a person knows that challah is not in flower form, so it was given to him as a gift. Why the urgency of returning it? We answer, shiny hasam. The case of challah is different. There are additional considerations, and because of those additional considerations, we insist on his returning it. You'll notice that an inverted house shape appears on the side of the Gemara. These inverted houses, there are two of them, they are two gishot, two approaches. Lahasbir, the afopid odom yodea shein mafrishim chalo kemach, even though a person knows you don't separate flour as the kemach tithe, lama ein oise kemach neshav matona biad kohen. Why is it not considered like a gift in the Kohen's possession? So now, that's the thrust of the Gemara, pretty much down to the end of the sugya. What's the urgency of returning that which really should have been viewed as a gift? So the Gemara continues. We said where the first inverted triangle appears, shiny hosam denofik churba mina. If the challah is not returned, if the flour is not returned, a churba. Churba literally means a destruction. A mistake will result. A mistake with negative ramifications will result. What's the problem? Zimnin de isle lekayin pochos mechomesh revoyim kemach. We mentioned earlier in today's shiur that there is a minimum amount of dough before we insist on the challah tithe being separated. If a person, let us say, prepares for himself a batter that will equal a cupcake, he doesn't have to tithe from that. If all he's preparing is a cupcake's worth of batter, very small amount. So there's a minimum amount. That minimum amount is called Chomesh Revoyim. Rashi, there's a lengthy Rashi that deals with the origin of this amount, this calculation. It's not essential. It's important for background knowledge, but it's not essential for understanding the Gemara here, other than realizing that there is a minimum quantity termed as Chomesh Revoyim. You might have less than that. There's no challah requirement. By the way, the challah tithe is a very serious matter in the sense that it has the same status as truma. And I'm sure many of you know that mistakes concerning truma tithing could result in a penalty of misa bidei shamayim, death at the hands of heaven. And hence, it's important to know whether or not you're dealing with something that is obligated and being tithed or not. So let's continue in our Gemara. Sometimes, zimnin de islei l'koin pochos mechomesh revoyim kemach, might have a kohen in his house that has less than the required amount of tithing. By the way, a kohen is required also to separate the challah tithe. There's significance in the act of separation. Exactly who's going to eat it? The kohen can keep it for himself. He's the one that's entitled to eat it, but the act of separation is necessary. So we might have a kohen that's preparing a batter of less than 5 revoyim of kemach, 5 revoyim of flour, v'hai olish lei b'hadi hadodi, and he will take the flour tithe that he received from some other Jew, and olish, knead it, together with his less than 5 revoyim that he took out of his own cupboard. Well, he's then, if he's then added this flour tithe that he received from some neighbor to his own pochos mechomesh revoyim kemach, now he's got chomesh revoyim. Vikosovar, the kohen will mistakenly think that he doesn't need to tithe. Why not? Obviously, the tithe that he received, you don't have to tithe from a tithe. That's exempt. And it's from his own flour, he was preparing less than the required amount as well. So you have 2 exemptions. 0 plus 0 is 0. So he's going to think that niskinov, word takona or tikkun, fixed, means for our purposes that his dough is acceptable. It doesn't need any further tithing. And that's not true, because the flour that he received was not a tithe. It says, we saw in the source, that mafresh chosek kemach eino chala, it's not considered a tithe. It's not chala, it's regular flour. If he mixes that regular flour in with his own personal flour, and now he has chomesh revoyim, he's going to think that he doesn't need to tithe. V'osi l'michla betivla. And he's going to come to l'michla means to eat, betivla. His betivla means untithed. Betivla. His dough or his whatever he's baking there, he's going to end up eating it in the state of tevel. And eating something in tevel is, as we said before, is a very serious offense. It could carry with it the penalty of misa b'dei shamayim. The Gemara asks, but v'ha'amris, didn't you say before, odom yodea shein mafrishin chalo kemach? And everyone knows that flour does not serve as the chalo tithe. If everyone knows that, so this kohen isn't going to run into this mistake. He's not going to think that his batter is tithed already or is free from tithe, that doesn't need any tithing. The Gemara says, "Oh no, we said that, but it's not like we thought. Yodea v'eino yodea. He knows certain things, and there's certain things he doesn't know. Yodea she'ein mafrish chalo kemach. Okay, he knows that flour cannot serve as the chalo tithe. V'eino yodea, but he doesn't know the sovar." Tamayumai, he doesn't know the reason behind it. He thinks the reason that chala cannot be in the flour form, mishum tircha de kohen, because of the added trouble that a kohen has to go through in taking the flour and adding water and kneading it. So he thinks that, in general, because of the tircha factor, the trouble that he has to go to, the flour is not viewed as an effective tithe. Ah, the tircha de kohen achilte, but this kohen, he's forgiving on that. He forfeits forgiving on it. He doesn't mind the trouble he has to go through in adding water and kneading it. And oh, if I don't mind, so then the challah tithe in flour form would be good, would be a real tithe, and hence exempt, and my less than 5 revoyim is also exempt, and therefore I don't need, but that's a mistake. The flour is not acceptable, not because of the trouble that he's willing to forego. It's not an effective tithe because of the pasuk that we mentioned in our shir much earlier today. It's not related to any reason. It's a scriptural insistence that the challah is to be tithed as dough, not as flour. The Gemara continues. We're still asking questions. Why is it so important to have the flour returned? We mentioned above that it's gezel biad kohen if he doesn't return it. Why is that so urgent? V'teheve truma. Let it be viewed the same way as we would view an improperly tithed truma tithe. V'loy teichal ad sheyotzi aleha chala mimokom acher. And simply say to the kohen that you cannot eat your batter, or in the case of the truma tithe, the fruits, until you separate, until you do an act of separation, until you do a separation of challah, separate from the dough. The Gemara uses the loshen mimokom acher. Rashi points out that mokom acher is lav dafka. It doesn't mean from another place. It means even from the batter itself that the kohen is preparing. So why do we turn to the kohen and say, you've got to return it? Turn to the kohen and say, don't eat it until you do a tithing. You do your own tithing. Milo Tanan, do we not have precedent for that? Does it not say in the following source that deals with truma tithing, and more specifically, improperly tithed truma? The source deals with separating truma. The truma is a tithe that you separate from your harvest. In this case, we're going to be making reference to flower pots. It doesn't mean necessarily something you're putting on your window. It could be a large area in which you're cultivating things, where some have holes in the bottom. That's called nukuv, and some do not have any holes in the bottom of the receptacle that holds your crop. That's called eno nukuv. On a halachic level, on a halachic, or could say a doraisa level, possibly on a Torah level, things that grow in unholed flower pots do not need to be tied. They're not considered connected to the ground. Things that grow in holed flower pots, the hole in the bottom of the flower pot creates a situation where there's a connection to the ground. We'll call it an atmospheric connection to the ground. It's not blocked off from the ground, and hence it's considered as if it's growing from the ground and needs to be tithed. In the source that we're about to read, we're going to see someone who separates a truma tithe from a crop growing in a hole, in a flower pot with a hole in it, a receptacle with a hole in the bottom, to exempt something that is growing in a flower pot that has no hole in the bottom. Well, that's not an effective tithing, because you're declaring as truma minachiyuv ala poter, from something that itself is obligated, to exempt something that's not obligated. So what about so that's not going to be effective to exempt the flower pot crop with the hole in it. So the source says, mina nokuv al she'eno nokuv. If a person tithes from a crop growing in a nokuv receptacle with the hole in it, to exempt something that's growing in an unholed receptacle, truma, it's declared truma, meaning that the kohen does not have to return it, the kohen can keep it. But you shall not eat from the crop that grows in the hold receptacle until you tithe again. So what do we see? We see when you have an improper tithing take place, we insist on doing it again. We don't say you've got to return it. The Gemara answers, betray money tzoyis. When you're dealing with a situation of two separate vessels, tzoyis, he will listen to you. What do we mean by two separate vessels? The case we just saw. He was tithing from the crop in a nokuv to exempt a crop in an eno nokuv. Two separate vessels. There, tzoyis, he will he will listen, he will abide by your instructions. Bechad mona, that which is relevant to one vessel, lo tzoyis. In the case of the kemach, so what happened? He tithed flour from a bowl in which a batter will be prepared. And you're going to tell him, well, the kemach tithe from this bowl is no good. You're going to have to tithe from this bowl again when it becomes a dough. He won't listen to you. And since he's not going to listen to you, you know ahead of time he's not going to listen to you. So we tell the Kohen, give back the flour. In other words, the suggestion that we saw in the a few lines up, six, seven lines up, Teve, Truma, and all that, that whole suggestion is irrelevant to a case where you're dealing with Chad Mona, one vessel, as is the case of the flour, as we just described. We're not offering here reasons and psychology of why people in two vessels will listen and in one vessel they won't. We're going to leave that aside. But that is a, we'll say, a given. And hence, we can't rely on our merely telling the Kohen to tithe again. Another approach to the issue of why are we so insistent on returning the kemach. A Kohen will listen to you. Rashi explains that Kohanim, that to whom you give tithes, are generally speaking diligent individuals, careful individuals. If you tell them things, you tell them something was wrong, they'll listen to you. Tzayas means listen. There's no difference when spelled with an aleph or with the two yuds. It's the same basic word. Meitzes tzayas, he will listen to you. The kosovar, but the problem is not the kohen who received the flour. The problem is with regard to the homeowner who originally tithed his stuff. The kosovar balabayis, Niskino isaso, the osi lemechal betivlo. If the Kohen doesn't give the flour back to the original Jew, that original Jew is going to think that, well, the batter that he's going to prepare has been tithed already. He gave his kemach, he gave the flour to the Kohen. He's now going to add water and make himself a few hefty loaves of bread and eat it. And it hasn't been tithed. That's called osi. He'll come lemechal to eat it betivla, untithed. And as we said before, that's a serious sin. Question: what do you mean he's going to think it's tithed? Did we not say before Adam yodea shein mafrishim chalo kemach? Everyone knows that that is ineffective. The Gemara answers: yodea v'ein yodea. He knows something, but he doesn't know everything. Yodea shein mafrishim chala kemach, that he knows that a flour tithe is generally speaking ineffective. The eino yodea, but he doesn't know the savar taimomai. He thinks that the reason for it being ineffective is mishum tircha de kayin, because kayhanim are now going to be subjected to extra trouble in adding water and kneading it. Well, tircha de kayin kibla alei, the kayin accepted upon himself. I gave him the flour. He accepted. He didn't object. So he accepted upon himself the trouble he's going to have to go to. So therefore, my tithe is effective. And we're telling you that that's not so. Don't try to offer reasons as to why the tithing is ineffective. Giving flour is ineffective. The Torah says it's ineffective, regardless of tircha or no tircha. Question: why, though, does the source say that the kohen has to give back the flour? Veteve truma, let it be treated the same way as an improper tithing of truma. V'yachzer v'yitrom, and tell the balabayas, tell the owner, tell the Jew who gave the flour as the tithe to tithe again once it is made into dough. Milo tnan, did we not learn, like we saw just above, the same source, mishen onokuv ala onokuv, truma v'yachzer v'yitrom. You have to tithe again. The Gemara answers, well, hal ukimna, but we've already established the reliance upon his tithing again is betray money tzoyes. Bechad mona lo tzoyes. When it comes to a tithe given from, taken from one vessel to exempt something in another vessel, and you tell him a mistake was made and you have to re-tithe properly, he'll listen to you. But with one vessel, like the case of the flour, you tell the balabayas you've got to tithe again once it turns into dough, he won't listen to you. The Gemara asks, the lot soyas, what, a person doesn't listen? Even when it comes to one item, the hotnan hatoreim kishus v'nimtza mora. Person is tithing from, kishus is a type of vegetable, and you separated a portion of it, or some of the kishus, and it turned out to be bitter. Avatiach, another type of vegetation, v'nimtza suruch, and it turned out to be rotting. Truma, v'yachser v'yatrom. Notice we dashed on v'yachser v'yatrom. Tithe again. And here you're not dealing with two separate vessels. You're not dealing with minan nokuv al sheino nokuv from one on another. Let's assume that you have one bowl of kishus, one bowl of avatichim, and the one that you gave to the kohen turned out to be either mora bitter or soruach sour. Just tithe again from the same bowl. The Gemara answers. There, the worst-case scenario, namely that he won't listen to you, isn't really so bad either. Shiny Hossam, there's a long answer. Shiny Hossam, that case is different. Dimidoraisa, on a Torah level, if you tithed your kishus and it turned out that that which you gave to the kohen was mora, was bitter, or you tithed your avatichim and it turned out that which you gave to the kohen was saruach, on a Torah level, truma ma'al yohi, you have fulfilled, malia means good, positive. A good tithing has taken place. Mida Rebbe Eloi, based on Rebbe Eloi's teaching. So that, in that case, okay, you gave him something you gave him a vegetable, it turned out that which you gave him as the tithe wasn't the best. It was bitter, or it was sour, it was rancid, it was rotting. It doesn't matter. You've fulfilled your tithing requirement. We would like you to do it again because you should give something good to a kohen, but doesn't mean if you gave him something bad that it's not effective. It is effective. So as we said, even though it's a case of chad mona, even if he's lo tzoyes, no catastrophe. Not like the case of the dough that would remain literally untithed. So what does Rebbe Eloi teach? Diom Rebbe Eloi, minayin l'torim min ha'ra l'yofe, she'trumos ha'truma. From where do we know that one who separates from raw, from the bad, to exempt the yofa, that which is good, you gave the kohen his tithe from poor quality vegetables in order to exempt your good quality fruits and vegetables, and nevertheless trumas and truma, it's acceptable, it's fulfilling the truma requirement. Shenemar, the pasuk says that when you give your tithe to the kohen v'lo sisu olav chet barimchem es chelbo. When you give your tithe, you should give it in such a way that you are not considered a sinner. How do you give your tithe in such a way that you're not considered a sinner? That's if you give your tithe from chelbo, from good quality stuff. If you give your tithe from good quality stuff, so then you've tithed in a proper fashion. If you have given your tithe from poor quality, not chelbo, chelbo means high quality. If you gave your tithe from poor quality, so you have tithed in a sinful fashion. I'm going to repeat, that's the key phrase here. You have tithed, but in a sinful fashion. The Gemara continues, Im eino kadosh, if giving poor quality is not considered a tithing, so nesius chet loma, what have you sinned in? You've done nothing. It's one thing if you've done something in an improper fashion or in a poor quality fashion. We say you've done it, but in a sinful fashion. But if you haven't accomplished anything, so where's the sin? Mikan, from here we see l'terim in a ro'al yofe, that when you tithe from poor quality on to exempt the good quality, shetruma so truma, the tithe is considered a tithe, but as we said, it's a sinful type of tithe. Don't confuse this with the idea of sinning in general, where if a person, let's say, would have accomplished nothing, and then he would go on to eat that which he thought was tithe, that's a sin, but that's not a sin in a sinful tithing. That's a separate sin of eating tevel. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.